What's up, everyone? Welcome back to Between the Tackles podcast. Burge is back. I'm finally back. I missed last week due to Christmas. You know, I got three little kids. By the time I was done, I was exhausted. So that's why you didn't hear my voice last week. But from the sounds of it, Hogan and Manish had us covered last week. So Manish, welcome back. Happy New Year. How you doing today?
I'm doing great. I love when a podcast starts off with the host going third person. So I think we're in for a really entertaining last regular season podcast.
Absolutely. I gotta throw my name out there, third person.
I hear you. I hear you, brother.
Well, you'll notice Hogan is not here this week. He's down for the count again. Hopefully, he'll be back for Wild Card Weekend next week. He did happen to send us some picks for the wild spreads that we're seeing for Week 18, courtesy of the fact that only a few of these games actually mean something in the NFL. Thank you, NFL, for the 17th game of watching a lot of bad backup football. Basically, this is the addition of the fourth preseason game when you think about it. You're going to be watching a lot of the backups. You're going to be watching teams resting players. There's really not a lot to play for outside of, you know, two or three games this week. But before we get into the preview of the lovely Week 18, I want to start talking about some coaching changes that we may be seeing on Black Monday, which is only, you know, as we record, we just got to get through the weekend before we're going to get some news on potential vacancies in the NFL. Now, there are several coaches on the hot seat at this point of the year. Teams underachieved. Teams didn't take necessarily their step forward that was expected of them going into the 2024 season. But I want to start with an intriguing one. And this is a team that's still actually playing a meaningful game come Sunday or Saturday. I don't even know when the game is. But that's the Bengals' Zach Taylor. The Bengals were a team that I had at the beginning of the season to finish in the first place in the AFC North. I expected them to get back on track to where they were a few years ago when they were playing in the Super Bowl. That obviously did not happen. They got off to a really slow start and never really seemed to really hit their groove until, you know, the last third of the season, which is why they're still playing a meaningful game in Week 18. Manish, what's your opinion on Zach Taylor's status in Cincinnati going forward?
Yeah, it's interesting. He's finishing up his sixth season. If they miss the playoffs, which, you know, mathematically looks like greater odds are that they will miss the playoffs than make them, that'll be four missed playoffs in six seasons. You got Joe Burrow at quarterback. You can't really control the injury bug, and Burrow obviously has been snake-bitten in some respects from that perspective. But, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if Zach Taylor were not retained. If I were a betting man, I would say that he would be back simply because the Bengals have been so hot after that abysmal start to the season. The last month and a half has been just incredible, not only for Joe Burrow, but Jamar Chase, that whole offense. The defense is playing, you know, a little bit better than they did in the first half of the season. So that lends me to think that Zach Taylor would be back. But if you look at his entire body of work, missing the playoffs in four of six seasons isn't something that, as an owner, you'd be particularly proud of when Joe Burrow is your quarterback. So just a name to keep an eye on. I do think there's a couple other potentially surprise firings. You see that every season. You know, there's definitely five, six definite teams that are going to be looking. You know, three of them already fired at their coach during the season. But you know, the Bengals one is something to keep an eye on. I think ultimately Zach Taylor will be back. But it wouldn't surprise me if they missed the playoffs, if they decide to go in a different direction.
Yeah, it'll definitely be interesting to see where that goes. Definitely an underachieving season for the Cincinnati Bengals this year, even if they do find a way to beat the odds and get into the playoffs there. Next one I want to move to, this would be a surprise firing like you talked about, and that's your Philadelphia Eagles and Nick Sirianni. I want to get your take on this because we were talking about it a little bit before we started recording here, and you brought up some interesting points. I personally thought he was going to be fired after last year and the way they collapsed down the stretch.
You know, if you look at the raw numbers, there's really no reason to fire Nick Sirianni. He's 47-20 as a head coach. And in the pantheon of coaches, he has done exceptionally well in the first several years of his coaching tenure. However, A lot of people, and I'm among them, will point to the talent on this Eagles team, and not to say that anybody can coach them to a 47-20 record over several years, but I do think, given the fact that they did replace both coordinators this offseason, given the fact that Sirianni does not call plays himself, he started off being the play caller when he was hired, then about 4 or 5 weeks into the season, he handed that off to Shane Steichen, and things kind of took off from an offensive perspective from that point forward. And as you said, Birch, given the fact that they collapsed last year down the stretch, got blown out in the wild card game, I think there is a not reasonable chance that the Eagles could move on if they get blown out in the wild card round. And I think that's really what it would take. If they win a playoff game, obviously it's going to be back regardless of what happens in the divisional round. If it's a white knuckler in the wild card game, let's say they lose on a last second field goal or something of that ilk, I think that Sirianni would be back. But if they do get their doors blown off like they did in the wild card to Tampa Bay last year, then I think it's possible that Jeff Lurie, Howie Roseman would move on. It's just an interesting dynamic with Nick Sirianni, because on paper, he looks like one of the best coaches in the NFL. But if you talk to people around the league, the general sentiment is that he's fine. But in many ways, this year's Eagles team should be lauded for their defensive play caller who was hired this offseason. And to some extent, Kellen Moore, their new offensive play caller, but more about Saquon Barkley. So Vic Fangio and Saquon Barkley are getting a lot more praise than Nick Sirianni is this year. So again, I think it would take something catastrophic in the wild card round for Jeff Lurie to entertain that thought. But if they do have another non-competitive wild card loss, I think that's on the table.
That'd be very interesting to see a team that goes that, has that strong of a season, moving on from their head coach. But, I tend to agree with you when you talk about, on paper, he looks like one of the best coaches in the league. And, I can't move off of last year with how fantastic they started that season off, and they literally imploded down the stretch. I have a good friend that's from Philly, and he's a big Philly fan. And I remember last year talking to him about going into the wild card game. He's like, "Oh, they're going to get blown out." I'm like, what do you mean? Like they ended up finishing with a pretty strong record at the same time. I'm like, the Eagles are going to, pants the Tom Brady-less Tampa Bay Bucks. And, that didn't happen. I was like, oh man, you were right. He was on the train that they were going nowhere. Like, I want to say at the end of November last year, he was like, yep, they're done. I hate being an Eagles fan, but blah, 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 blah. But yeah, it'll be very interesting to see where that goes. I want to move from the NFC East to the AFC East and talk about the Miami Dolphins and Mike McDaniel. They've, when Tua has been healthy, that team has been an oiled machine. They've last year they were incredible on offense. This year, even when Tua has been healthy, they've had some really strong performances, although I do believe they did take a little bit of a step back, even with Tua in there. But he's an interesting one to think about. And, I point to, I guess the biggest thing for me with Mike McDaniel in the Miami Dolphins is they haven't proven that they can win like a cold weather game or playoff game. Last year, they go into Kansas City and they basically no show. I mean, Kansas City kind of owned that game, the entirety of that game. And, you fast forward to this year, I mean, Mike McDaniel carries himself with a lot of swagger as a head coach, the players coach and this and that. And, he should be credited for, getting his share of the credit, I should say, for that turnaround of that team and why they, you and I both picked them at the beginning of the season to win the AFC East this year. Obviously that didn't happen. They are still alive for a playoff spot going into the last week of the season. So it'll be very interesting to see where they play out. What are your thoughts on McDaniel?
Well, I think he's a terrific offensive mind. He's completing his third season. He potentially could have three winning seasons and potentially three playoff seasons. But if they were to miss the playoffs this year, finishing 8-9 or potentially 9-8 and miss the playoffs, it would not surprise me if Stephen Ross moved on. As you said, this team has not fared well in cold weather. They also haven't fared well against teams with winning records. It's actually remarkable how they feast on teams that don't have winning records, and they struggle mightily. And it's been consistent against teams with winning records. Look, I think Mike McDaniel's a terrific coach, an interesting personality. I think if he were let go by the Dolphins, that he would get head coaching interviews. I know sometimes Coaches like to take a year off and kind of reset and recalibrate. But I think that Mike McDaniel would be a guy who would get coaching interviews, head coaching interviews during this cycle. I don't necessarily think he needs to rebrand himself as an offensive coordinator. Obviously, he would take that if head coaching opportunities weren't there. But it's not as if the Dolphins' offense with Tua has been terrible. As you said, they have taken a step back at times. But for the majority of his 3-year tenure in Miami, the offense has been a juggernaut when Tua was in there. You know, one of these playoff years that he was in, he didn't have Tua. Skylar Thompson, I believe they had a playoff game in Buffalo. So, I mean, what can you really realistically expect, you know, in a scenario like that? Maybe Stephen Ross keeps him. The other thing to keep in mind, I don't know how relevant this is 3 years after the fact, but Mike McDaniel was not Stephen Ross's first choice. He wanted to hire Sean Payton. That obviously didn't work out. So, you know, as we said a moment ago when discussing Zach Taylor, there's always a surprise head coach who's let go, sometimes multiple surprises. I wouldn't rule out that the Dolphins will be looking for a head coach in about 3-4 days.
My last one I want to talk to you about, and it's also in the AFC East, and that's the Buffalo Bills and Sean McDermott. Now, obviously, Buffalo, I think, exceeded a lot of people's expectations this year with their record and their performance this year. They're one of the Super Bowl contenders from the AFC this year, despite my personal feelings about it. I have never been a fan of Sean McDermott. Yeah, there's a little bit of bias in there, but I think that he is a product of what Brian Daboll did with Josh Allen when he was there as to show the ascent of the Buffalo Bills to be what they are and have been for the last 4 or 5 years. I bring him up simply to talk about if Buffalo does not win a playoff game this year, does not reach the AFC championship this year, or even if they don't reach the Super Bowl this year, because, you know, even as much as I loathe the Buffalo Bills, I think they're the most deserving team out of the AFC to go there. Definitely not Kansas City. And, you know, you can make an argument for the Ravens and Lamar, but they didn't exactly have the best regular season, you know, as good of a regular season as the Buffalo Bills did this year. If Buffalo underperforms again in the playoffs, could you see a situation where Sean McDermott is shown the door?
Wow, that's a tough question. But ultimately, as an owner, you have to think, have we peaked with this head coach? Sean McDermott is finishing up his 8th season. He's been to 6 playoffs in his first 7 full seasons. The last 3 years, they've lost in the second round. You know, one could say they probably should have gotten to the conference championship in one of those years, if not for really questionable defensive scheming after the Bills took the lead in Kansas City. We kind of remember what happened. I guess there was, what, 10, 13 seconds left, something like
seconds.
That. 13 seconds, right. And that was, I can put the fault in that game specifically, missing out on an AFC title game appearance on Sean McDermott. I just thought the idea of how they played those last couple plays was faulty, clearly faulty in retrospect. But even in real time, I don't think it made much sense. Even the kickoff to so many mistakes. And I know Buffalo Bills fans are probably wondering, you know, we win that game, we go to the Super Bowl, maybe we win the Super Bowl. This to me is their weakest team, and somehow they are the number 2 seed, and I think they're the best team in the conference. I think they've had stronger teams in the past, especially a few years ago when Stephon Diggs was at the peak of his powers. And this year you're really seeing Josh Allen, and to a little bit less of an extent, James Cook, who's playing well, but he's obviously feeding off of the greatness of Josh Allen. You know, somehow they're making it work. If, for example, they lost in the divisional round, would the Bills move on from Sean McDermott? I don't know. That's really tough. But let's just say they don't make the AFC Championship game again. That would mean one AFC Championship game appearance in 8 seasons with Josh Allen. And that's just not good enough. You know, he is way too good of a player to waste these prime years on forgetting about not even getting to a Super Bowl, but only getting to one conference title game. This is the year for them, I think, to go to the Super Bowl. And if they fell short of even making the conference title game, there'd certainly be some hard questions to be asked. Now, would the Pegulas, pull the trigger on making a change? I don't really know, but what I do know is if I'm a Bills fan and if I lose, four consecutive divisional round games, or three divisional round games in a wild card game, which I don't think is going to happen. I don't think they'll lose their first playoff game. But if they don't make it to the AFC Championship game, there's got to be some serious questions about what isn't working with Sean McDermott.
See, that's the stance that I take when I'm looking at the Buffalo Bills through a non-biased lens, is that they have to have peaked with the message that they've been getting from Sean McDermott in the performance. If they're not able to get over that hump, and, I agree with you 100% that the year that they blew that game, the 13 seconds with the kickoff to the touchback, to the defensive play, cry about the overtime rules back then all you want, but that was inexcusable. I remember watching that game, and this was like peak hatred of Buffalo for me, like real peak. I was laughing hysterically at the way that game played out. And, for Bills fans, I can't help but feel for them, obviously, like putting my bias aside there, I'll feel for them for that. But at the same time, that was their chance. They still have another chance. Now, if they fall short again, maybe it's time to switch the message up. I wanted to kind of spring that one on you. I know we didn't talk about that one at all, but I wanted to get your gut reaction on that one. Before we move on to a really bad team, I'm just going to throw some names out there to you, and I want you to just right off the top, fired or safe?
Okay.
Fired or safe? Fired or safe?
Okay.
It's Antonio Pierce.
Fired.
Shane Steichen.
Fired.
Doug Peterson.
Fired.
Mike McCarthy.
Fired.
Brian Daboll.
Oh, I think he's such a good coach. I'm going to say fired.
And the last one I'm going to do is going to segue us into the next one. Gerard Mayo.
All right. My final answer is safe.
The only one I listed safe is the one that pisses me off the most. Moving on to the New England Patriots. They played the Los Angeles Chargers on national TV, mind you, on national TV, the weekend after Christmas. And they got, it was probably the most inept game of the season. Like, Jim Harbaugh pantsed the players and Gerard Mayo, the head coach. The Patriots was 40-7. Drake May gets concussed, or looked like he was concussed, went to the locker room, came back in. Christian Gonzalez got concussed. So the two most prized possessions of the New England Patriots locker room both got head injuries in this game. Drake May came back. They obviously didn't do anything. The defense looked inept, as we expected. The offense really didn't look good again. Everything we've been saying the whole time was just the same stuff. And this was in front of a national audience the weekend after Christmas. So, everybody's off. Like, it's the holidays. So everybody's off. Football fans are watching football at Gillette Stadium against a West Coast team at 1 o'clock. And you got pantsed. There's just no other way to look at it. The chance of fire Mayo were being thrown around Gillette Stadium. The Boo Birds were out. Just an all around. I mean, couldn't have paid me to be at this game. Couldn't have paid me to be there. It just. What does Robert Kraft need to see to move on from this guy, from Gerard Mayo and the entire coaching staff? And I'm going to go as far as to say the Elliot Wolf in the front office. Matt Groh, all these guys that have been there for years. The only constant that was removed was Bill Belichick. And yes, that is a large constant. The greatest coach of all time is no longer in the room. So you're going to expect some bumps and some downs and this and that. I can't point to a single thing other than the quarterback that has me excited for next year. Maybe I'm thinking, oh, we got a lot of cap space. Not to mention the Giants winning last week. The Patriots currently sit in the number one draft spot. None of that gets me excited, because if this coaching staff comes back and the front office comes back and they try to run it back, I am going to be kicking and screaming all offseason. I am going to be just you know, I'll sit back and have to watch and be like, all right, I guess I got to watch this, but like, I'm not going to be happy about it. And, you know, I don't know what more Robert Kraft needs to see. I know it's his guy, and like, the whole process was just all FUBAR. It was so FUBAR the way they went about doing it. And didn't even hold a coaching search. They didn't even name Elliott Wolf the general manager until after the draft. And it's just, they're just a baseless, or they're just a clown organization now. How the mighty have fallen. Like, they fell when Bill Belichick and Tom Brady left, they fell, but they still had Bill Belichick and they were still winning games they shouldn't have. And they were still like in the talk of the playoffs up until like the end of the season outside of last year. So like, they were always there. Now you got players coming out, calling the fans out. Jelani Tavai today on the radio, basically telling the fans to stay in their lane and know their place. All these guys are coming out and shooting their mouths off. You got Dietrich Wise is another one who came out and told the fans, basically told them off. These are guys that have been here for years. These aren't like new players. These are guys that were here when Bill Belichick was here. Dietrich Wise has won a Super Bowl here. Like, what are we doing? What are we effing doing? Like, the only reason I watch the Patriots and have watched them the last 8 weeks of the season is because of the quarterback. I was watching that game on Saturday. Drake May got hurt on the first drive. I'm like, well, I guess I could turn this one off because there is absolutely no reason for me to watch. I can't do it. I can't do another season of this.
You will do it, though.
I will, because I'm a sucker. I'm a sucker. The NFL's got me roped in. I'm going to do it. I ask my oldest son. He's 4 years old. I ask him, you want to watch the Patriots? He goes to me, the Patriots stink. I'm like, this was not my upbringing with the Patriots. Yeah, they stunk when I was like 5 years old, when I was his age. They stunk, but they had Drew Bledsoe. They had Bill Parcells. So they had allure. They had reasons to watch, and they were improving. There is nothing with this team right now that gives me any type of comfort that they're going to improve, other than the fact that they may get the first overall draft pick. We'll get to that after I hear your take on this. And that they have all the cap money. But if they're not going to spend the cap money again, what are we doing? What are we doing? How the mighty have fallen. Manish, I need to catch my breath. Go ahead.
The silver lining in a second. You just mentioned two of the you know, the key points of the offseason. First, I don't think the Patriots are a clown organization. I understand your frustration. It's been a couple decades since you guys have felt the pain that most franchises, you know, frankly feel every 2 or 3 years. For you guys, it's been, you know, 20 some odd years. You know, as far as keeping Jerod Mayo goes, it certainly looks like the Crafts want to give their handpicked successor to Bill Belichick more than 1 year to prove that he can, you know, right the ship. You know, in Jerod Mayo's defense, offensively, I think, you know, they're lacking talent, and I think that'll change this offseason through free agency and the draft. I think, you know, as we've discussed in past podcasts, the revamp on the offensive side can happen fairly quickly. So, you know, there's that to hang your hat on. I understand the fans' frustration in terms of calling for a new head coach during the game last week. You know, things have kind of been bleak. Other than Drake May for much of this season, Jerod Mayo has made his fair share of mistakes on the field, after games, and things he said. But ultimately, if he has the trust of the owner, then he's going to get more than 1 year. Maybe he'll surprise fans with better talent on the offensive side. And we talked about Nick Sirianni not long ago, you know, having a great record. And, you know, someone who grew up in Philadelphia, I can point to the talent that he has to work with, whereas Jerod Mayo has a fraction of the talent that the Eagles have. So an upgrade in talent could make anybody look better, players and coaches included. So, you know, it appears that on Black Monday, the Patriots will not be looking for a head coach, and they're going to stick with Mayo. And what I can say about this is that for all the frustration that you and other Patriot fans have, you really can take solace in the fact that there is a lot at their disposal in terms of assets financially and draft pick compensation that could really, you know, change the fortunes of this team fairly quickly. And I know we're going to get into it. And I just think honestly, depending on how things go against the Bills on Sunday, they could be in an unbelievably great position come draft day if they do, in fact, have the number one draft pick. Because I would assume that when draft day rolls around, they won't have the number one draft pick, and they'll turn that into part of their strategy of revamping this team in a fairly quickly quick manner.
I think a lot of my frustration with this, it's hard for me to really truly fault Jerod Mayo himself. All right. My anger on this and my frustration is more towards Robert Kraft and Jonathan Kraft for green lighting this whole process. Jerod Mayo's been a coach for 5 years. Like overall, 5 years. He was a linebacker's coach. He kind of rose quickly with Bill's son Steve there with the defense. The defense was doing really well. I mean, I have to think that Bill, based on the performance of the defense this year, where it's relatively the same personnel, give or take a few guys here and there, that Bill had his hand in that. He was really helping his son out with that defense. And just with how badly that this defense has regressed this year. I mean, this was the backbone of the team. You know, they're going to be in games because the defense is going to keep them in those games. That has not happened at all. Not even close. The defense has been, I'd argue, the worse unit than the offense this year because Drake May is actually, they've looked functional. They've looked, at times, they've looked really good with no talent. So for me, the fact that they didn't do a search last year, you know, they just got pantsed by a guy they could have interviewed last year on Saturday. Like, you know, you got guys like Mike Vrabel going unhired. And he's a Patriots guy. Like, he's got coaching experience at college as a coordinator and as a head coach versus Jerod Mayo, who's never even really truly been a coordinator. He's never been a play caller. So it's like, I look at that and I'm just kind of like, my frustration sits there. And it's like, okay, last year they basically ran the operation the way it was, minus Bill and his kid. Like, a lot of the same coaches are there. You know, obviously Alex Van Pelt was not there, but DeMarcus Covington was there in a different role. You know, you had these guys that have been in the building, the front office, Elliot Wolf and Mac Rowe, still here. They were Bill guys. They worked under Bill at the time. It's hard not knowing what the plan was. I mean, I'm assuming, again, we talked about this at the beginning of the season, that the Patriots clearly punted this season by not addressing any of their real needs and truly addressing them outside of quarterback at the draft. Like, they could have brought in more bodies at the offensive line. The wide receivers that they took this year in the draft are not looking good. I think you might have sent me a graphic, or somebody sent me a graphic about Ja'Marr Chase. Ja'Marr Chase has more receiving yards than the entire Patriots, like, receiving yards. Like, that's gonna, and you got guys like Jalen Polk, okay, for example. Ladd McConkey, the guy who just went big time against the Patriots last week. That was the Patriots pick. They traded that pick to the Chargers. So it's like, you were going to take a wide receiver. Why didn't you just take the guy? And, you know, Jalen Polk clearly hasn't worked out. He seems like he's got a little bit of an attitude problem too. And, you know, the culture that is surrounding the Patriots team right now is very frustrating with how these guys are coming out and talking to the media and everything. And I know that's how it is in the NFL, like, outside of the way Bill was, but when Bill was here, everything was tight-lipped. You didn't have any of these issues where they're coming out and they're calling fans out. I mean, you have to think that, Robert Kraft hates seeing that. He can't like that this team is coming out and trying to basically calling out the people that are paying the salaries, you know, in the building, publicly on, you know, media availability times. So that's tough. But to avoid going down a further rabbit hole with this, I want to talk about the game coming up, and that's against the Buffalo Bills on Sunday at Gillette Stadium. This is arguably the biggest game of the year for the Patriots. You know, us fans are like, you know, this is the biggest game of the year. Don't win this one. Don't win it. Because like you said, with the number one pick at stake, I think everybody is united on this, that if they get the number one overall pick, they ain't selecting it number one. You're trading out and you're getting whatever you can get at that point. Bills are going to be resting their players. you know, Josh Allen is going to play at least some part of the first quarter because he's going to keep his Iron Man streak alive. Fake Iron Man streak, if you ask me. Tom Brady would have been playing three quarters of that game if he wanted to keep a streak going. Josh Allen ain't Tom Brady. But basically against the Bills backups, Alex Van Pelt coming out saying that despite Drake May being limited in practice this week because of a concussion, that he's going to start. I don't know if I don't want to read too much into that right now because that could be just mind games or whatever. We're going to play to win. He has to say that. He's not going to come out and say that they're going to lose the game or try to lose the game. They're not going to say that. But if he goes out there and he plays, I'm going to be basically, you know, sitting puckered up the whole game being like, don't blow your knee out. Please don't blow your knee out. Like, have a serious injury that's going to impact his offseason and training camp in the start of next year. It'd be stupid to do that. There's no point. I want Joe Milton to play. I want to see what they got in him. I want to see him play. He had some moments in the preseason where he looked good. But ultimately, at the end of the day, just lose the game. Just lose the game, and you're going to set the franchise up. You're going to set the franchise up for the future. And maybe then my mindset will – I'll calm down. I'll get off the high horse of being angry as much and being like, okay, they got all these problems. They want another chance. Here's your chance. Don't screw it up. What are your thoughts on this game? Do you think Drake May should be playing in this game at all?
No, I don't think so. The fact he actually does have an injury matters, but I think the bigger picture is the first pick. You know, coaches and players most coaches and players never throw games. You know, they do actually prepare and play to win the game. So if they're out there, they're not going to roll over. Some of these guys aren't even they're not even going to be on the team next year, so they couldn't care less about the number one overall pick. But from an organizational standpoint, it obviously makes all the sense in the world not to win the game. But you can't tell players and coaches that. So what you do is you put lesser players on the field and let them play and try their hardest, and ultimately they'll lose. I mean, I'll draw an analogy from a different sport. Or team that I'm familiar with, and that's the Philadelphia 76ers, when they had the process and they traded away any semblance of a quality player to bring in lower-level players and elevate G League-level players. So you know, those teams weren't trying to lose, but I think ownership and management knew that how well and how much these guys tried, their talent level just wasn't up to par with the competition. So invariably they were going to lose games. So I think in this particular respect, you play a Milton at quarterback and he's going to try his best to put great stuff on tape and show the Patriots, that he does belong, but he's not as good as Drake May. So you have Milton out there, you lessen your chances of winning, even if you are playing the Bills backups for, much of the game. And if I'm Gerard Mayo, Elliot Wolf, the Crafts, I so desperately do not want to win this game. It means absolutely nothing. There's no such thing as momentum heading into next season. The momentum dies the minute this regular season's over, and then players go away for a couple months, and then you restart with OTAs and minicamp and training camp. There is no momentum from any kind of week 18 win for a team that isn't making the playoffs or coming close to making the playoffs. The difference in having the number one pick versus not is colossal. Because you will have teams, whether it's Tennessee, Cleveland, the Giants, trading up or giving you offers to trade up for the number one overall pick. And that will, in all likelihood, include multiple premium round picks, which is a top 100 pick for this year. In all likelihood, depending on who you trade with, how far you trade down, you're going to get, because it's for a quarterback, you're going to get another future first round pick, which in all likelihood will be a top 10, top 15 pick. Unless the rookie quarterback that this other team drafts takes you to the playoffs, which is possible. You saw that with Jaden Daniels and maybe with Bo Nix. But, you've also seen with Drake May that the Patriots have the top overall pick, or, Caleb Williams, the Bears have a top 10 pick this year. So you could potentially set yourself up with a top 10 pick this year, a top 10 pick next year, a second and or third round pick, again, depending on how far you're sliding down. It's invaluable. It really is invaluable because you're going to get a top 10 pick this year, assuming you stay in the top 10 when you draft a player and slide down. Plus all these other draft capital that you're going to acquire, it really helps you revamp quickly. You hit on the pick you're going to get after the trade, knowing you have two first round picks in 2026, knowing you might have two second round picks this year, maybe two seconds and two thirds this year. Who knows what the package will be, but it'll be immense, because when you're trading up to one for a quarterback, a team typically gives up a haul, and there's plenty of quarterback needy teams who are going to be willing, even in a weak quarterback class, a quote unquote weak quarterback class, who are going to be willing to fork over that draft capital. And the Patriots can really, really cash in and set up their franchise for the next 5, 6, 7 years.
You know, for me, with this game, it's like, if Jerod Bayo is truly safe and they're truly going to move into next year with him, like you said, he has nothing to play for here.
Right.
He should be playing for next year and hoping that he is able to get the best players in here next year to help improve to Robert Kraft that he is the guy and can improve off of this dumpster fire year. It's going to be interesting to see. I mean, you remember me last year, never root for my team to lose, right? I'm one of those people on Sunday, I'll never root for them to lose. This Sunday, I am rooting like hell for this team to lose, because I want to be able to get that haul. Everybody across the board will be trade down. There's going to be no reason to take a tackle at one or to take Travis Hunter at one if that's the route they want to go. This takes it out of it. The Patriots can't fall out of the top five with even if they win. So, but the drop down from one to five, in terms of like at five, you're not trading back. You're going to take your guy at five,
right?
Especially in this class, because there's only really two quarterbacks that are, you know, considered the top of the draft talent, and Sanders and Ward. So just please lose this game. You know, give us fans something positive to look into. Yes, with a loss, please give us something positive to look into the offseason with, especially if you are dead set on bringing Jerod Mayo back next year. So we'll see how it plays out. It's going to be the most critical offseason that this Patriots organization has seen probably in 30 years. I got to think back to when they got Drew Bledsoe, and I can't think of another more critical offseason for the New England Patriots franchise. And I was 4 years old when they drafted Drew Bledsoe, so I don't even remember it, if I'm being honest with you. So he was my first jersey, though. But you know, we'll see where it goes from here. But for now, as always, we are brought to you by the Fans First Sports Network, and we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors. We'll be right back with you. All right, and we're back. We, once again, brought to you by Fans First Sports Network. Check them out. Got all sorts of podcasts, articles, all sports. Great content, great group of people to work with over there. So yeah, be sure to check it out. We appreciate being a part of the network over there. Moving on to Week 18 to actually talk about good teams again. I don't want to be talking about any more dumpster fires. I don't think I have it in me. I'll probably fall asleep at the desk if I have to spend any more energy on that today. But we talked about this a little bit off air beforehand, but Saquon Barkley's got a shot at breaking the all-time rushing record this week, and it doesn't look like he's going to play, Manish, does it?
No, he's in all likelihood not going to play. Earlier in the week, Nick Sirianni said he probably wasn't going to play. All indications are that he's not going to play. It's an interesting question. Do you rest him along with your offensive line? Because if you're going to play Saquon, who needs a little bit over 100 yards to break Eric Dickerson's record, you really want him to run behind the starting offensive line. So you risk possibility that one of the offensive line men get hurt. You risk the possibility of somebody else on offense blocking a receiver, A.J. Brown, God forbid, would get hurt as well. So Nick Sirianni, Howie Roseman, Jeff Lurie, I think they made a collaborative decision to rest Saquon. And what I thought was fascinating was Saquon's answer about how he felt not going for the record. The way he told the story was that after the game, Sirianni came after him after Sunday's win. Sirianni came up to him, and Barkley said, the record really doesn't matter. It's okay. But then after he slept on it, he thought about what it would mean from a historical perspective. He admitted that his family members wanted him to go for it as well. I just think, you know, from an organizational standpoint, it's the right decision. If you had asked Eagles fans before the season began how important the rushing title was going to be to you as a fan, I would say 95% of them would have said they couldn't care less. They want to win a Super Bowl. But as the season went on, you saw Saquon ripping off 150, 180, 200-yard games, almost a 300-yard game, or 300 total yards, whatever it was. You start to think, hey, you know, he might be within striking distance of Eric Dickerson. But I can tell you as a lifelong Eagles fan that I don't really care about the record. If I were Saquon, I understand wanting to go for the record. But ultimately, it's about winning a Super Bowl. This is a franchise that's only won one Super Bowl in its existence back in 2017, as Patriot fans are well aware of. But this is a team that is positioned to make a Super Bowl run. Will they get there? Who knows? It's a very competitive NFC. But if you can give yourself a de facto bye, you clearly still have to win three games to get to the Super Bowl. So it's not like you have to win fewer games. But if you can give your entire team a week off, or you know, most of your starters a week off, you know, a lot of nicks and bruises along that offensive line and other guys on that roster. You know, Jalen Hurts wasn't going to play anyway because he's dealing with a concussion. He's in the protocol. I say, you know, give these guys the rest so you're fully charged up, ready to go for what looks to be an extremely tough first-round matchup, whether it's the Commanders or the Packers. Not going to be easy sledding for the team regardless. So if you can give these guys a little bit of rest, Saquon's had, you know, nearly, 350, a little bit less than 350 carries already. You know, give him a little rest. I know the record means a lot to him personally. I just think the risk, you know, is not worth it, not only for him potentially getting banged up, but for somebody else in the offense, specifically the offensive line. And, yeah, it's a nice record, but I think getting 2,000 yards, being the ninth player in NFL history to get 2,000 yards in a season, is quite an accomplishment in and of itself. So, you know, just one fan's opinion. I think the Eagles made the right decision to rest him. I know it's tantalizingly close for him, and he probably at age 28 is not going to get another chance at this record. But ultimately, the record takes, in my opinion, a backseat to, you know, winning the championship and raising a Lombardi Trophy.
I couldn't agree more. And, you know, Corey Clement was out of bounds on that touchdown catch back in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, he was. Did they have replay? I can't remember in that Super Bowl. I think they had replay, and they still got it wrong. Yeah, look, I'm an Eagles fan. I thought he was out of bounds. I totally agree with you. But, you know,
doesn't matter.
Can't go back in time. Can't go back in time.
As much as I wish they could. But back to Barkley, I couldn't agree with you more. I think that him sitting is for the betterment of the entire organization and the team. It's a team decision. If you got the record, like, it'd be cool, you know. But, like, Dickerson still did it in less games. Like, he got the 2,000 yards in what was a 16-game season, which is very impressive.
Right.
Like you said, the ninth player, you know, this and that. And, you know, I'm going to look at a lot of these records. You know, maybe this is me just being now part of the older generation of watching football versus when I was a kid, when it's like, oh yeah, these are the records. He's the greatest, but blah, blah, blah. But you get an extra game now for all of these yardage type records and touchdown type records to get. So it's almost like I look at it a little bit differently than if he were to have accomplished it in the 16 games of the season versus the 17th game. So I think it's 100% the right decision. Moving on to, you know, where the playoffs sit and how this week 18 is going to impact the playoff standings and the, you know, who's going to be in the playoffs themselves. There's only a few games, like we said, that actually matter this week. I just want to quickly talk about the biggest one of them all. And, you know, we've kind of hit on the other ones. We'll talk about them when we get through to our picks here, but Detroit, Minnesota on Sunday night, the last game of the NFL 2024 regular season. I'm stoked for this game. I think this is going to be great. I am a fan of both teams. You know, I've been very outspoken about the Detroit Lions, and this year the Minnesota Vikings have definitely won me over as one of those teams that be like, I really will root for them. You know, I'm rooting for either Detroit or the Vikings to win the Super Bowl this year. I don't care who comes out of the AFC because it's probably going to be Buffalo, and I'll never root for them against one of these two teams. But just some great stories there. You have Detroit, who was in the NFC Championship game last year, kind of threw it away at the end with some coaching calls, or you can call it that, but Dan Campbell coached that the way he's coached every game that he's played. And then you have the Minnesota Vikings, who have been, and I don't can't recall how long Kevin O'Connell's been there. I think he's been there for 3 years. This being his third season.
I believe that. Yeah.
And the first year they were really good and kind of faltered down the stretch. Last year, I think they kind of took a little bit of a step back. And then this year, nobody really expected them to be where they are right now. You know, they Kirk Cousins walks in free agency. They're going with Sam Darnold as their quarterback. And it's worked out extremely well for them. Like you and I agree, coach of the year right there, Kevin O'Connell, for what he's done with this Minnesota Vikings team. And it's going to be an outstanding matchup. And we'll decide the number one seed of the NFC this year. And the fact that one of these two teams is going to be a 5 seed after Sunday night is just wild. That NFC North has been an absolute juggernaut this year, outside of the Chicago Bears with the, you know, the Packers, Lions, and Vikings were all playoff teams out of the NFC, and the NFC has been a strong conference this year. You have any thoughts on what Sam Darnold and Kevin O'Connell have done in Minnesota this year? I know you're a big Sam Darnold guy.
Yeah, Darnold's been magnificent. I think in most seasons he would be the MVP favorite, but you know, Josh Allen and Lamar Jackson have been absolutely tremendous. I think ultimately it's going to go to Josh Allen. You know, the guy who statistically has had the best season is not going to win it in all likelihood, and that's Joe Burrow. So, you know, just four incredible quarterback seasons this year, and that's not even including Baker Mayfield, who I think got Pro Bowl snub, but there's just not enough room for, you know, all these quarterbacks. But Darnold, clearly in the upper echelon of quarterback play this year. It's great to see. You know, I saw the talent as a very young player, flashes of it here and there where I thought, wow, this guy is going to be amazing. But ultimately, for a number of reasons, it didn't work out in New York. He had hit a few moments in Carolina, but I think going to San Francisco, resetting as a backup under Kyle Shanahan did him, worlds of good, because, his coach now, Kevin O'Connell, is really bringing out the best. This is the best Sam Darnold has ever played consistently. And I think that's what, you know, even if you talk to a younger Sam Darnold, like I did many times, consistency what is what he was always chasing, because he had so many of those flash moments, full games where he was dynamic. He just couldn't string together 3, 4, 5 in a row. And this year he's, strung together an entire season. So the pedigree is there. Really good to see, on a personal level, I'm really happy for him. He's one of the most solid people you'll ever meet. Genuine person. Nothing fake about Sam Darnold. Just a hardworking guy, humble guy. I think he wanted it. In fact, I know he wanted it to work out in New York. It didn't. It'll be a fascinating rematch. These guys played in Week 7. It came down to a Lions game-winning field goal in the waning seconds. That's a game the Lions had a double-digit lead in the second half and kind of blew it before like having to regain and pull it out of the fire. What I think is going to be the most fun about this game is the fact that the Lions defense stinks. I mean, you saw it the other day where the Niners were moving the ball up and down the field. And that's what is really, from a fan's perspective, going to be so much fun, because the Lions have a lot of firepower. Now, they'll be tested against a pretty solid Vikings defense, but they did put up 31 the first time that they played him. So they're going to be able to score points, and you certainly know the Vikings are going to be able to score on this decimated Lions defense. So this is going to be an up and down game. Take the over. I don't even know what it is, but I can guarantee it's going over. I think both teams score in the 30s. It's going to be a fun game, an entertaining game. And as you said, look, the loser is a 14-3 team that has to play on the road as a 5 seed. We'll see how things shake out in the first round of the playoffs, but in the divisional round, you could see a third matchup between these two teams. They could play each other as a 5 visiting the number one seed. So I think it's a lot of fun, a lot of star power, obviously, with Justin Jefferson, both quarterbacks, Sam Darnold, Jared Goff playing an exceptional level. Jared Goff also in that mix of the MVP conversation earlier in this season. Jahmyr Gibbs, Amon-Ra St. Brown, you've got star power all over the place offensively in this game. Weather's not going to be a factor because it's going to be in a dome. It's going to be a really fun game, an extremely entertaining game. I think, not only is this the most important game of the season, of course, but I think that this has the potential of being the the most entertaining game of the season, simply because you've got two great offenses and you've got one solid defense that is completely decimated. So you know the Vikings are going to put up points, and you know the Lions can't really be held down. So, you know, it's going to be a fourth quarter game. Like the first time around, it wouldn't surprise me if the team that has the ball last wins.
Yeah, I cannot wait for this matchup. And the over-under is at 56.
Yeah, I mean, I would take the over. To me, 56. Oh, yeah. I mean, I think this game has a real chance of going over 60.
And you got the two teams that they have something to play for here, home field. Yeah. Like, it's not like it's just to, you know, get in the playoffs or whatever. Like, there's a lot riding on this game for both these teams. So probably the only really good game that we're going to get in week 18. And luckily it's on Sunday night to end the regular season to go into the playoffs. But want to do picks? Let's move into our picks. This is going to be the fun one. We're coming down to the wire here with our picks here. Hogan in absentia has sent in his picks for this week, so I will be sure to give those to you. We're all three of us are neck and neck going into the end of our champions race here between the tackles. Hogan currently sits at 21-21. Manish, two games back of me at 22-19-1, and I am 24-17-1. We decided to spice up the last week of the season here at Between the Tackles on these picks. We're going to do it almost kind of like a Family Feud style type scoring system for these picks, where the wins are worth two, right? We said wins are worth two. Losses are also worth two. So a little bit more stakes at play here, and we are picking against each other in these games. So there is going to be a lot of potential swings that could happen with these here. I'm going to start off. I'm just going to read Hogan's picks first, because he didn't go against either of us on this. This is going to be kind of a you versus me battle going into the end here. Hogan started off. He picked the Cleveland Browns plus 19.5 at the Ravens. Big number, but again, the teams don't really have all that much to play for. Ravens have maybe a little bit of seeding to play for, but that's about it there. He took the Bengals minus 2 at Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh also jostling maybe for seeding. The Bengals need to win to have their shot to get into playoffs. So he's taking the Bengals minus the 2 points. And he's also taking the Dolphins minus 1, who are also playing for their life to get into the playoffs, needing some help on the outside as well. Playing a team that flat out stinks like the Patriots, and that's the New York Jets going through a transition there. So Browns plus 19.5, Bengals minus 2, Dolphins minus 1. I'm going to start. We're going to go back and forth here, Manish.
Okay. So all right.
Talk about our conflicts here. I'm going to start off with a game that's not a conflict, and I'm going to be taking the Panthers plus 8.5 versus the Falcons. Falcons have something to play for. The Panthers have shown some fight down the stretch of this season here. Bryce Young has actually kind of asserted himself a little bit to be like, all right, he gets another shot there in Carolina this year. You know, they're given the 8.5 points. I think it's going to be a closer game than, you know, one of these dumpster fire games are going to be. So I'm going to take the Panthers plus 8.5. It's not going to surprise me if they win outright against Michael Penix and the Falcons. What do you got, Manish, for your first pick?
All right, I'll take the one that – oh, actually, you know what? Am I at odds with you at all these picks? No.
No, you got the Vikings.
You're not – you weaseled out of picking the best game of the year. So I will take the Vikings as a 3-point underdog on the road against the Lions. You know, we just discussed this game. Sam Darnold's on a heater. I think they win this game. They are the least talked about 14-win team that I can ever remember. You know, Lions justifiably got a lot of pub early in the season. They were my preseason Super Bowl pick. It's a shame that they've been ravaged by injuries on the defensive side, but that cannot be ignored. I think they're a different team. Now, offensively, they're an explosive team, even without David Montgomery. They do take a little step back without Montgomery, but they can still load up on points. Defensively, completely different team than what we saw in the first half of the season, the first 6 weeks of the season. I don't think you can dismiss that fact. And, you know, the Vikings have won 9 in a row. They are on a mission. Weather will not be a factor. I think it'll be a nip and tuck game. And as I said a moment ago, the team with the ball last will win. And I think that team will be the Vikings. And I think they'll win by a field goal. You know, I know we don't pick scores, but I think this has got like 38-35 written all over it.
That'd be fantastic. Like we just got done talking about. I can't wait for it. My next pick, I'm going with a big spread. I'm going with a big spread. You disagree with me. I'm taking the Saints plus 14 against the Bucks.
Okay.
Bucks are going to be trying. Bucks have something to play for. The Saints obviously do not. They stink just as bad as the rest of the teams in the league. Looking for a quarterback. Going to be looking for a coach. All of this. I just can't. I don't see the Bucs winning by two touchdowns. It's just one of those games. I don't think it's going to be a blowout. I think the Saints will give them a fight. It's a divisional game. The Bucs obviously have something to play for to secure their playoff life here. I believe that the Bucs will win, but I believe it will be a closer game than two touchdowns. Go ahead, Manish.
Okay, well, I mean, there's one team in the NFL this year that's gotten shut out. I'll give you one guess. You want to guess what team that was?
Patriots?
No, it was the New Orleans Saints not that long ago against the Packers. And I mean, to me, this has got Mike Evans, 100 yards, two touchdowns, Baker Mayfield, two or three touchdowns, Bucky Irving, 100 plus, maybe a couple touchdowns. This has got a 40 burger written all over it. I don't know if it's going to be a shutout, but I think the Buccaneers, when they're at their best, they're just as good as any team in the NFL, frankly. And the Saints, they've already packed their bags. I know they've played well for their interim coach at times, but you know, they're ready for their flights to Aruba or the Dominican Republic, wherever they're going. I just think that this has got a beatdown written all over it. Typically, I don't like laying these points, but this is a unique scenario being week 18, one team's done, the head coach is done. The other team is a win and in scenario and with a lot of firepower on offense. Baker Mayfield ticked off, I'm sure. He won't say publicly. Ticked off that he didn't make the Pro Bowl, although he'll probably make it because everyone, you know, backs out and the alternates get in. But be that as it may, I think this is a big game for Baker Mayfield, big game for the running attack, big game for Mike Evans. I don't think there's a competitive moment in this game. Lay the 14. I think this is a three touchdown, if not more, spread for the for the Bucks.
We'll find out. We'll find out if you're going to catch me. But this next pick I got, we're going against each other again. And this is going to be me willing the first overall pick into existence in New England. And I got the Bills -3 against the Patriots in Foxborough. I know the Bills are playing their backups. I know the Patriots coaches are saying they're going to win. I'm manifesting. I am manifesting the first overall pick for the first time in my life. The first time in my life, I am rooting for the Patriots to lose. This was all heart. It may cost me the championship here and the on between the tackles, but I got to do everything in my superstitious power to will this thing into existence. Bills -3. Make it happen. Go ahead. Put me in my place.
All right, well, this is what I'll say. It will be 7-0 Bills because that'll be the drive that Josh Allen's in. And then when they pull him, you're looking at a combo platter of Mitch Trubisky and they're recently added Mike White at quarterback for the Bills for the remainder of the game. And if Drake May is as good as you think he is and as good as I think he is, I think he can put up points against the Bills backups. And, yeah, I don't like the idea of the Patriots winning, as we previously discussed. I think, you know, if I were a Patriot fan, it would make me violently ill. But Drake May and the Patriots starters against the Bills backups, you know, spotting the Bills 7 points, or some worth 3 points. I'm assuming Buffalo will score when in the drive or two that Josh Allen's in the game. I think the Patriots are going to win. I think it sucks for the organization. I just don't think the Bills backups are going to beat who have nothing to play for, but they're the backups, so they're going to be trying hard against any team's really first team offense and defense. Is a tall ask. So, you know, again, does it help the Patriots? No. I would feel bad for the fan base because it would cost them the number one seed. But if Drake May does, in fact, play all 4 quarters, if it's not a situation where May only plays a quarter and then they bring Milton in, you know, if that happens, then all bets are off. But I'm operating under the assumption that Drake May is going to play the entire game, primarily against the Buffalo's backups, and the Patriots defense is going to face Mitchell Trubisky and Mike White. Because of that, I think the Patriots will win. I think it's a, you know, it's a win that Robert Kraft, Jonathan Kraft will look back on with disgust when they, you know, think about what could have been. But, you know, unfortunately, I think that's how it plays out.
It would be Gerard Mayo's dagger in my back, calling for his job.
Play to win, play to win, right? You play to win.
I'm hoping we get some good news between us recording right now and Sunday when they take the field, that Drake May didn't still fighting the concussion and he's going to sit this one out. I would be just so happy. Regardless of the result of the game, I just don't want to have to sit there and worry that my quarterback is going to get a significant injury in a meaningless game at the end of the year. We'll see how it plays out with this interesting format we got for the final week of our champions race here in Between the Tackles. I sit in first place. I could very well end up in the basement after this week.
Yeah, I think nobody would like that more than Hogan. So
Hogan would be sitting.
We don't have to wait until Monday, which is good. We'll know by Sunday night after the Vikings game. I mean, it would actually be great if I was down by one going into that Vikings Lions game. That would be a lot of fun. In fact, that's what I'm hoping for.
I'm gonna be sweating that whole game if that actually happens, because that's all I'm truly gonna care about is beating Manish in the Between the Tackles champion race. So I don't have to sit here and listen to Hogan about how I blew it on the last week of the season, because he ain't gonna let me live that down.
That'd be fun. This has nothing to do with what we're talking about, but I'd be remiss if I didn't say that Christian Gonzalez, I believe, got snubbed in the Pro Bowl voting. You know, I think Derek Stingley and Patrick Surtain absolutely deserved it. But the other two guys, I think that Gonzalez was more worthy, and a little disappointed. You know, again, I'm just a football fan. Now, I know good talent when I see it, and I know high-end play when I see it. And to me, Christian Gonzalez, you know, over Marlon Humphrey, Denzel Ward, one of those two guys, I think he certainly deserved an opportunity to get, you know, to get that award. I think when it's all said and done, he'll be an All-Pro, whether it's first or second team, but he certainly deserved to make the Pro Bowl.
Yeah, luckily the Pro Bowl truly doesn't matter all that much.
No, it's just resume padding. Obviously, they don't play games anymore. Or do they play the
flag football
game? Yeah, flag football. Right. But just in terms of recognition, it is a little disappointing when a guy like him in the AFC and in the NFC, the Eagles rookie Quinion Mitchell also didn't make the Pro Bowl. I thought both those guys played at a Pro Bowl level and were well-deserving.
And, you know, all they'd have to do to make the Pro Bowl actually kind of exciting is still put it back after the Super Bowl the way it used to be, so you could have most of these guys that are in the playoffs maybe show up at this point. You know, like, it's, you end up losing the two best teams, quarterbacks and players, because they're rested for the Super Bowl.
Yeah, they just don't want to tackle. They don't want to tackle anymore. There's a reason why these games were typically, you know, 58 to 55 or 62 to 60. They don't tackle. So it was borderline unwatchable. And honestly, I don't watch the flag football games, but like watching these guys basically wrap up and play two hand touch that wasn't entertaining either.
Gone are the days of Sean Taylor absolutely laying out Brian Moorman, the punter, in the Pro Bowl.
That's a classic. Doesn't get any better than that. That's one of the many memories of Sean Taylor. But yeah, that was, every time I see that, it puts a smile on my face.
Real
guy who actually was playing to win.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, that'll do it for this week's episode 58 of Between the Tackles. I do want to just say, Manish, this has been an outstanding season on the podcast here. So happy that you're a part of it. I've had an absolute blast talking football with you every week or every other week, you know, whenever I've had to, you know, miss out and all that. I'm looking forward to continuing to talk football with you through the playoffs, the offseason, the draft, all that jazz. I just want to say thanks for coming on with us again, and I'm looking forward to everything that we do in the future.
Yeah, well, thanks for Hogan and you inviting me. It's been an incredible 2024. It's always fun for me, from my end, talking football with you guys. I can't wait for the playoff discussion and all the intricacies of free agency and the draft. As you know, football's a year-round thing now. So, but I had a blast. It was a great first year. for me, you guys welcomed me, and you know, I just think it's, you know, it's a lot of fun talking football with people who understand the game and who offer differing points of view. We don't always agree, but I think that makes it, you know, that much more fun.
Absolutely. And you get to see the intricacies of how Hogan and I's relationship is going back all the way to high school. So it's been a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to the future. Have a great week. Enjoy the games. I'm sure we'll be talking Sunday night when the game's going on. Enjoy it. Peace. We'll be right back.